Hello and welcome to Data Today, brought to you by Zorka.
I'm your host, Dan Klein, and I look after everything data and AI at Zorka. We're living in a world of opportunities, but to fully realise them, we have to reshape the way we innovate. We need to stop siloing data, ring-fencing knowledge, and looking at traditional value chains. And that's what this podcast is about. We're taking a look at data outside the box to see how amazing individuals from disparate fields and industries are transforming the way they work with data, the challenges they're overcoming, and what we can all learn from them. In season two, we're exploring how we can use data to save the world, from helping people discover their history to combating fake news. We're going to be covering a lot of ground. In this episode, we're going to delve into the Quantum of Salazzo. For the uninitiated, that's the legendary blog penned by today's guest. But I also think it's a great way of thinking about the frankly crazy amount of knowledge and experience he has in open data, healthcare, and the public sector. Giuseppe Salazzo currently heads up data products and services at the Department of Work and Pensions and has spent his entire career at the heart of the public sector. He initially aspired to be an academic, but one failed PhD later, he realised he needed to be more agile in his career trajectory. This led him into the Department of Transport, the NHS, and placed him squarely at the nexus of how we communicate data across society. So how does Giuseppe believe that legacy systems, public discourse, and information gathering can be combined in his current role?
I mean, one, of course, is the question around maturity and skills. So obviously, not all departments run the same sort of services. Interestingly, DWP is probably the biggest entity running services directed to the public in the UK, very different from the DfD, which fundamentally is a policy-driven department where all the frontline work is dealt with by the agency, you know, the DVLA, DVSA, and the like. So obviously, there are different departments in different stages of that journey. And I think what I'm finding in government is that there is a very good community of people working with data across that journey. The other side of multidisciplinarity is the fact that you have to collaborate with people and understand what you can learn from others. So that, I suppose, every government department should do something in that space. And once again, that brings me back to the years of when I wasn't in government and there were all this, you know, advisory panels about open data. I mean, I was member of one. There was an interesting move within departments to say, well, we actually need some form of development of our internal skills, of our internal understanding of data. So to me, the DFC was the biggest thing on my agenda was, can I, yes, build capability, yes, hire the teams, yes, run the Napton service, all that, but also how can I raise the profile of data within the department so that the department understands what it means to get a bit higher up on that journey towards good uses of data? What does that mean to the department, to a department that doesn't run services directly, especially?
So you're currently at the Department for Work and Pensions. You've not been there very long because you've just jumped across from the NHS. In your new role at DWP, what have you uncovered that goes, oh, wow, that's actually really amazing. That's not what I was expecting.
Well, I have to say, finding myself leading a division of 150 people, it's a challenge. I've never had a team that big. It's not just about the people, it's about the number of services that we run. And what's been difficult is to learn about all these different services. It's an interesting place to be for someone who likes to learn about the technical detail. I obviously cannot have all the technical detail about each one of those services. So there needs to be a relationship of trust with all the people I have, and I'm trying to build that. I'm amazed by the variety of professions that are in my division. I have everything, the data specialists, data managers, data engineers. I have some DevOps. I have people who are product managers. And all those people work together fundamentally to process data, to run platforms that then enable our analysts internally, but also some digital services. And I mean, I have some of the data matching duties within my teams that are absolutely remarkable to a data nerd, especially. I mean, we do the data matching on behalf of the Department for Leveling Up Housing and Communities for the individual voter registration and the annual canvas. I think we processed over 50 million records since 2014 when the new process was created. But also the service we provide to local authorities for the annual data canvas has basically resolved a lot of problems for those teams in local government. It also saved money. And then we also do the same stuff, you know, data matching for processes and initiatives that actually help some of the most vulnerable people in society, you know, the cost of living payment, the warm homes discounts. So what's really interesting is to see the impact that good data processing in central government can have on citizens and residents. And that's been absolutely amazing. And I can't praise my team enough for the passion that they put into those services.
The DWP provide a vast array of services, from managing cost of living and winter fuel payments to operating job centres and pension services. Working with third parties, such as energy suppliers, to determine eligibility for initiatives like the Warm Home Discount is also part of the DWP's mandate. So you can imagine that Giuseppe has a lot to keep track of in his role. With so much data to sift through, one must ponder the role of AI in all of this. The hype around AI and Gen AI and LLMs has only grown in recent years, so you have to wonder what role AI plays in Giuseppe's current job.
So first of all, I'm not responsible directly for any AI in my current job, and that was fundamentally when I started looking for jobs. It was a kind of deliberate choice after being for almost 3 years at the center of that hype. And as I said, DWP is actually looking at AI, is looking at generative AI, but is doing that in a very, I think, good way, which is about understanding how these tools work, understanding what is the impact or the implications on the users. And when I say users, I mean both internal and external users. And the DWP abides completely by the government's 12 risks on AI. And you know, that's an interesting list for people to look at. And you know, number one is how to address bias and unconscious bias, which AI can introduce. But I'd say there is hype around AI, as there is hype around any technology that is, you know, hot on the media. This is not obviously just the public sector. I mean, don't blame me, I'm a civil servant. That's the usual joke. But I do believe that there is good work that can be done with AI. But I've also seen quite closely what that hype can do to inflated expectations sometimes. So once again, I do really appreciate the approach we have, in which is all about, can we understand, can we measure, can we correct? And yeah, that's fundamentally where I am personally with the journey. I'd say I can expect some hype to be around AI, as I expect, you know, there's a lot of also negativity around AI. And once again, to me, it links up to the question we were discussing before, is how do you manage an AI application? How do you keep making sure that it delivers what it's meant to deliver without impacting negatively the people it needs to serve?
And so under common law, computers are, after some chopping and changing, seen as infallible. Where does that leave us in terms of the generative AI discussion?
I think what I'm seeing, and the positive of this, is I'm seeing very good discussions happening. And of course, you know, the speed at which legislation changes is not obviously very fast, and that's just the nature of the systems. Regulation is changing as well. Obviously, when I was in the NHS, there were interesting questions around how do you put in production an AI system? What constitutes a clinical device? And there's a lot of gray area. I mean, there's gray areas in the way regulation works. It's almost, you know, I always make this joke, if you read the regulation, it almost seems to say, if you think it should be regulated, then it should be regulated. Mostly because there's a lot of fuzziness in the way these systems are described. And there was a time, I think it's still probably the current regulation, that says that you can only put in production AI systems that don't have dynamic models. And that is all well and fine if you think about models that work based, let's say, on X-rays, or they do that sort of thing, because human beings are very similar from the inside, probably more similar on the inside than they are on the outside. But then if you start thinking about any system that works, let's say, on something similar, on tabular data, on admissions data in a hospital, the population being admitted to hospital can change over time. So in a way, it's not more ethical or more secure or safer for the patient to only admit systems that don't dynamically change. And these are the questions I think that it's very important to support them in that, because the risk is not reaping the benefits of something that could actually be beneficial. And I mean, I've seen recently that there was a project we did in the NHS AI lab, nothing risky, nothing, you know, linkable to patients. It was about recognizing signs of Parkinson's disease in brain slices. People have donated their brain to Parkinson's UK, which is a research charity. We helped them find a way to detect signs of Parkinson's in those brains, which is amazing. What it does is to speed up the research process of human pathologists. And that is a great thing in many ways, because it shows a benefit. It's a benefit that is absolutely, I have no doubts about the ethics of this. It's making someone's job better. It's making someone's job more about the job itself than about the mechanics of loading a slice onto a microscope. And we should be supporting more of that, because I think that will help a lot, getting the benefits and understanding how to run AI properly. And of course, there are patients' applications down the line, but we need to be careful and we need to build the right frameworks around it.
In your current role at the Department of Work and Pensions, what are the top three things that you are worrying the most about in terms of things that you feel that you're on a bit of a mission at Department of Work and Pensions to enable your teams to fix?
I can mention two directly. The first one is actually we are doing a delivery review, because obviously what's interesting is that data departments all over the world have almost grown organically, because there was very suddenly a need to basically build up data teams and data functions. And my division especially has suffered from that. And we were looking at ways to basically, I would say restructure is a bad word. It's fundamentally reorganizing the way we do work so that we can cope with backlogs and make sure that we deliver what we're meant to deliver. In fact, actually, under my manager, Paul Lodge, we also have an office of the chief data officer that is creating a new data strategy to highlight the direction of travel for the next few years. So that definitely is asking that question, how do we keep delivering in a situation in which data demands are growing? And obviously, we need to be able to do that in, once again, a safe way. The other is the question around skills. And you mentioned my journey. Obviously, the skills I use today are not the skills I was using, I wouldn't say 10, but even 5 years ago. A lot of things have changed. When I was in IT, I was pivotal in two technology evolution from, you know, mail servers, for example, you know, from Solaris to on-prem Linux to the cloud. And the question for us, especially in central government, is how do we support our staff to develop new skills, evolve, making sure that they can see both a career progression, but it's not just about career, it's about also delivering their work. And technology is a big, big component of that. So those, I think, I would say the top two.
The digital skills gap in the UK public sector is something that is regularly discussed. In 2023, the Crown Commercial Service published a blog about why this gap has continued to widen and how more skilled workers might be trained or retrained. Giuseppe believes it's also crucial to adopt a multidisciplinary approach to public sector data work. He thinks that delivering information about data in innovative ways is valuable, and that many individuals in the workforce already possess the necessary skills to do this. The Crown Commercial Service blog also suggests that digital transformation was accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic. During that time, the DWP managed to scale rapidly without encountering any outwardly facing problems. Giuseppe was still working at the Department for Transport at this point. So how does he think the DWP achieved this?
First of all, the maturity, the digital maturity of the department. It's really, really high up. Probably, I would say, one of the best in governments. I don't want to bring down colleagues in other departments, but it's really, really good. The other is, of course, what I was mentioning before. A lot of people work in DWP. I find this way more in DWP than in other departments. Really believe in the mission of DWP to make life better for vulnerable people. So I think what happened during COVID, obviously I was not in this department, I think people really got behind that. There's a lot of people struggling this time. We need to help them. We'll make it happen. And there is, of course, a lesson in that for all of us working in government, which is when there's a will, there's a way. And often we can make things happen in a speedier way. Doing things fast doesn't mean doing things bad. And that is something that, for example, I've argued for a long time in the NHS, the fact that, yes, I entirely get regulation, I entirely get governance. These things are there to protect us, first of all. I'm going to be, I've been a patient of the NHS recently. I want the NHS to be safe and to be well-governed. But that doesn't mean that we should be waiting, 18 months for approvals for something, which is actually one real-life example from my previous life. That, I think, is a reflection. And the pandemic, I think, allowed many of us, and the TFT was a big and strong reflection around that. We can do things in a more nimble way, and that will still be a safe way if we have the right controls in place.
One of the topics you frequently discuss is communicating data to the public. In your current role, how do you disseminate information about things like winter payments or cost of living payments without confusing those who might benefit from them?
I think the general message is transparency and engagement are the fundamental thing that we need to do. The point is not just about giving full details, because some of those details are incredibly technical and not necessarily easy to understand for the general public, but having a model by which you can engage with the public, get their feedback, use that feedback to improve your services, and making sure that they know about that feedback loop is a very positive thing. And once again, fortunately, we are an organization that engages directly with the general public through the job centers, for example. But there is a general conversation to be had about how we go about communicating things. There was, once again, at DFT, we had a very, very good, interesting conversation about how we could use data for smart road regulation, how you basically change regulation on the way. And the major point was that is not a technology problem at all. The technology, I wouldn't say it's all there, but it's very easy to plan and deploy. The problem is how you communicate that with people. How do you make drivers understand and engage that? So it's once again about the cultural aspects of embedding data in everything, especially the time now where probably there's a bit less faith in data systems as there was 20 years ago. Obviously now people are worried about misusing of the data, and that's absolutely right. There is a thing I go banging on about all the time, which is the right of redress. We have processes, and we need to keep having those processes to make sure that if a wrong decision is taken based on data or based on any automated process, there must be a way for a human to review that decision. And that actually for us at DWP is paramount. We're not proposing ever to replace human decision-making with AI. We're thinking of AI, for example, I say AI, but that applies to any form of automation, as decision support tools for that human. And that is what is going to produce the biggest change, I think, in terms of how data produces good value and how we can communicate that good value to those people. If you think this is not just about data, by the way, one thing I've been following very closely, I'm a former chair of governance in a primary school, so I've followed that Ofsted very sad controversy. That is about the way we deal with processes that have been designed for a purpose, but which might have unintended consequences. How do we go around controlling those? How do we review those processes? I have to say, Ofsted very rightly at one point suspended the inspection to look at the nature of those inspections to see if maybe, once again, is there a communication problem, not necessarily a problem within the problem itself. So I think that is very important, engaging, right of redress, making sure that we keep people involved in those decisions.
So to put it in other language that you've used is to say this is making sure that the human is always in the loop, which actually ties really nicely back to the discussion about common law. Because if the common law is that computers are always right, you don't need a human in the loop.
The key question here is, what is the computer right at? How do you design that computer-driven system to be right? Once again, it's about quality control, it's about process management. Conversely, a computer can be an incredible help in making things right. I have an example from my previous life in Italy where, once again, I was working in labs. So part of our job was to create systems that did blood tests and reported those blood tests into a medical record. Now, once again, early 2000s, some varying approaches in Italy, not big, let's say, into digital transformation at the time. there was one specific hospital that didn't trust the computer system and trusted a single individual human to transcribe the results of the blood test. There was a case in Italy at the time where a hospital transplanted an HIV-positive organ into a patient because they were using manual processes. Now, a manual process can be safer, can be made safer. Obviously, there was a single point of failure in that human-driven system. So to me, it's always about minimizing risk. Nothing will have risk zero. And the question is, how do you check, how do you control, how you rectify, and how you pick things in time?
So what's the one takeaway that you would like our listeners to take away from how you drive the data agenda in government?
Data is multidisciplinary. And I think that is the takeaway that most people have to understand. You need data experts, you need the scientists, the DevOps, the engineers, whatever. But also you need the policy people, you need the engagement people, all working together with the public in order to make good data.
Communicating complex data to the public should always be approached carefully. In season one, I spoke with my good friend Heather Savory, who has over 30 years' experience in this area. She emphasised the importance of determining exactly what the public needs to know. Some individuals, like myself, are information enthusiasts and want to know everything. This approach doesn't work in public discourse. The key is to identify the most important information and then transparently disseminate it. Business ecosystems are not new. What is new is that they are becoming increasingly data empowered. To realize complex opportunities, we need innovation beyond boundaries, democratized information, and close collaboration between diverse players. Collaborative, data empowered, borderless innovation is how we embrace a world of exponential change. Thanks for listening to Data Today, brought to you by Zulca. I've been your host, Dan Klein. For more information on Zulca's work, please visit our website.